Applied Cryptography, 20th Anniversary Edition. Protocols, Algorithms, and Source Code in C. Bruce Schneier. Introduction. I first wrote Applied Cryptography in 1993. 2 years later, I wrote the greatly expanded second edition. At this vantage point of 2 decades later, it can be hard to remember how heady cryptography's promise was back then. These were the early days of the internet. Most of my friends had email, but that was because most of my friends were techies. Few of us used the World Wide Web. There was nothing yet called electronic commerce. Cryptography was being used by the few who cared. We could encrypt our email with PGP, but mostly we didn't. We could encrypt sensitive files, but mostly we didn't. I don't remember having the option of a usable full disk encryption product, at least one that I would trust to be reliable. What we did have were ideas. Research and engineering ideas, and that was the point of Applied Cryptography. My goal in writing the book was to collect all the good ideas of academic cryptography under one cover and in a form that non-mathematicians could read and use. What we also had, more important than ideas, was the unshakable belief that technology trumped politics. You can see it in John Perry Barlow's 1996 Declaration of the Independence of Cyberspace, where he told governments, quote, "You have no moral right to rule us, nor do you possess any methods of enforcement that we have reason to fear," end quote. You can see it 3 years earlier in cypherpunk John Gilmore's famous quote, quote, "The net interprets censorship as damage and routes around it," end quote. You can see it in the pages of Applied Cryptography. The first paragraph of the preface, which I wrote in 1993, says, quote, "There are two kinds of cryptography in this world. Cryptography that will stop your kid sister from reading your files, and cryptography that will stop major governments from reading your files. This book is about the latter," end quote. This was the promise of cryptography. It was the promise behind everything, from file and email encryption to digital signatures, digital certified mail, secure election protocols, and digital cash. The math would give us all power and security because math trumps everything else. It would topple everything from government sovereignty to the music industry's attempt at stopping file sharing. The quote, "natural law," end quote, of cryptography is that it's much easier to use than it is to break. To take a hand-waving example, think about basic encryption. Adding a single bit to a key, say from a 64-bit key to a 65-bit key, adds at most a small amount of work to encrypt and decrypt, but it doubles the amount of work to break. Or mathematically, encryption and decryption work grows linearly with key length, but cryptanalysis work grows exponentially. It's always easier for the communicators than the eavesdropper. It turned out that this was all true, but less important than we had believed. A few years later, we realized that cryptography was just math and that math has no agency. In order for cryptography to actually do anything, it has to be embedded in a protocol, written in a programming language, embedded in software, run on an operating system and computer attached to a network, and used by living people. All of those things add vulnerabilities and, more importantly, they're more conventionally balanced. That is, there's no inherent advantage for the defender over the attacker. Spending more effort on either results in linear improvements. Even worse, the attacker generally has an inherent advantage over the defender, at least today. So when we learn about the NSA through the documents provided by Edward Snowden, we find that most of the time the NSA breaks cryptography by circumventing it. The NSA hacks the computers doing the encryption and decryption. It exploits bad implementations. It exploits weak or default keys, or it, quote, exfiltrates, end quote. NSA speak for steals keys. Yet, yes, it has some mathematics that we don't know about, but that's the exception. The most amazing thing about the NSA, as revealed by Snowden, is that it isn't made of magic. This doesn't mean that cryptography is useless. Far from it. What cryptography does is raise both the cost and risk of attack. Data zipping around the internet unencrypted can be collected wholesale with minimal effort. Encrypted data has to be targeted individually. The NSA, or whoever's after your data, needs to target you individually and attack your computer and network specifically. That takes time and manpower and is inherently risky. No organization has enough budget to do that to everyone. They have to pick and choose. While ubiquitous encryption won't eliminate targeted collection, it does have the potential to make bulk collection infeasible. The goal is to leverage the economics, the physics, and the math. There's one more problem, though, one that the Snowden documents have illustrated well. Yes, technology can trump politics, but politics can also trump technology. Government can use laws to subvert cryptography. They can sabotage the cryptographic standards in the communications and computer systems you use. They can deliberately insert backdoors into those same systems. They can do all of those and then forbid the corporations implementing those systems to tell you about it. We know the NSA does this. We have to assume that other governments do the same thing. Never forget, though, that while cryptography is still an essential tool for security, cryptography does not automatically mean security. The technical challenges of implementing cryptography are far more difficult than the mathematical challenges of making the cryptography secure. And remember that the political challenges of being able to implement strong cryptography are just as important as the technical challenges. Security is only as strong as the weakest link, and the further away you get from the mathematics, the weaker the link becomes. The links become. The 1995 World of Applied Cryptography second edition was very different from today's world. That was a singular time in academic cryptography when I was able to survey the entire field of research and put everything under one cover. Today, there's too much, and the task of compiling it all is just too great. For those who want a more current book, I recommend Cryptography Engineering, which I wrote in 2010 with Niels Ferguson and Tadayoshi Kono. But for a review of those heady times of the mid-1990s and an introduction to what has become an essential technology of the internet, applied cryptography still holds up surprisingly well. Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Cambridge, Massachusetts, January 2015.